That is correct. It is John Lopez, Figgy Figs, back at the studio. I am next to John Lopez, Reginald Natatula. This is In the Loop. Hope you are having a wonderful Wednesday. Maybe it doesn't feel as good after what was a Tuesday that could have made you feel really good in AL wild card contention. Unfortunately, your Astros fall. But get involved with the program, first and foremost. We got the YouTube and the Twitch. Those are always going for you. But the text line is the number one get. On the conversation, 713-572-4610. We're at an NRG Stadium. Don't worry about that. That's not a big deal. No.
It's cool. We might reference it here and there.
Yeah, but just letting you know why it sounds a little bit different, why we are, maybe the background on the YouTube and Twitch looks a little different. We're at NRG Stadium sitting where where Mark and Andre sit for the broadcast. And there you go.
I just slammed the table in honor of Andre.
He said he would do it. I didn't realize it would happen that quickly. But, yeah, he's already doing it.
Every week, though.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Fig, and I appreciate you doing that for me. But
whenever Reggie has a good take, I'm going to go, oh!
We don't have to do that too much then, do we? But yeah, Fig, can we start with this play-by-play audio here? Unfortunately, the Astros, they turned it on a little too late and unfortunately weren't able to get it done falling 3-1.
And the 2-2 hit sharply right at Torkelson, and the Tigers hold on and win this one 3-1 as the Astros
Lopez, how'd you feel when that ball came off of Jason Hayward's bat in that moment?
Actually, as he's batting, I'm thinking, I'll be damned, they're going to do it again, aren't they? I mean, I was confident. I was confident that they were going to get it done. But, of course, the old game of interest thing got you. But I was the game itself, like literally, like 3 inches, 2 inches in one direction or the other, and it would have been at least tied.
Base hitting, yeah. I think you're going into extras at least.
Yeah, at least tied. But this was a game that, until that moment, I never really felt that good about. And we started watching it in the studio because it started at 1:35, not 1:32.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
And it'll do the same today. And we'll get to today's. But as far as yesterday, I never felt really good, foremost because of Subek. I mean, that guy was just...
Scooble.
Tarik Scooble. Subek.
Yeah, it's just, you throw a few sounds out there, eventually it gets
mostly
there.
Because of Scooble, but the thing is, he was even better than I thought he would be. It was pretty incredible. That's not breaking news. But then once they got him out of there, I started maybe gradually thinking maybe this, maybe that. But you know what I thought the story of the game was? And they talked about it. They referenced a little bit on the broadcast. But it wasn't like A.J. Hinch didn't manage circles around Joe Espada. Don't go there. Like Espada had his moments and all that. But, the old baseball axiom of little things, I thought he did a lot of little things well, man. I thought A.J. Hinch, put on a show managing his bullpen, taking advantage of matchups, that type thing, being somewhat ballsy at the end by pulling Tyler Holton, who will be the starter opener today. Just like little bitty things that maybe separated, the difference between winning that game and losing it.
Yeah, and look, when you start talking about managers, Joe Espada is going to be very front and center in this one. But I think this was tough, man, because it started with, and I think the ultimate decider in this was the thing that we talked about with B. Scott yesterday, the idea of which Framber Valdez are you going to get? And unfortunately, when it came down to it, you got the one that was just a little bit off, right? Mm-hmm. That did not have the best command and unfortunately kept some of his pitches up. And the Tigers, who have been hot, even though I may have, and maybe I jinxed him. Maybe I need to apologize and find some level of undoing of the things that I've done or the things that I've said. But the Tigers were able to really take advantage of that in, what was that, the second? The top of second, where they were just, sending them right back towards Framber right through the middle of the infield. And they got, a lot of runs, especially with two outs in that moment. And that was really the big difference, because that was not a team that had very much had very much on these Astros in the remainder of the game. I know that they threatened a couple of times, but that was the moment where they were able to make hay in this. And that's really frustrating, because you knew that they had a great guy on the mound, and early on putting yourself behind the eight ball was a frustrating thing, and ultimately is the decider.
That was, and I think Figgy was a Espada three was the cut. And when he said this, I'm like, that's not altogether true, because you know, he said basically, and you'll hear it here in a second, but he said, you know, I thought he had good stuff, or he, however he put it, and I'm like, no, he put the ball over the plate. He was not quite himself. Let's listen to this.
You know what? I thought his stuff overall was good. Just this, you know, his sinker was staying kind of up in the zone a bit, and they got some pretty good swings on those pitches. You know, he battled through five. He gave us a shot there. But I just thought that usually when you see that sinker getting away from righties, and you start seeing ground balls and the swing and miss on curveballs, that's a sign of where Framber stands that day. But I give it to him. He battled. He gave us five innings to give us a chance to win.
He did battle. But when your sinker's up, that's not good stuff.
Yeah.
That's not hitting your spots. And he knows that. I think he was trying to protect
his guy,
Framber, a little bit. But, you know, his stuff was good. No, it wasn't. It was inconsistent in the early going, when clearly the pressure was higher, when clearly Framber has had a mixed bag of being able to handle those moments. And, oh, by the way, is that the fourth consecutive start in the postseason that he's lost? So it's not bashing on Framber. Again, those little things were kind of all going in Detroit's
way. Well, let's get into those little things, because the tough part about this was Joe Espada is a first-time manager in the postseason, and he already had criticisms levied against him in his early tenure as the manager of this ball club. And with that being the case, that made it ripe. I don't know, what's the right word to use there?
Both. You can use both.
Okay. Well, that didn't help. that puts the situation in a place where you are open to that level of analysis, and let's go ahead and do that.
Yeah.
The thing that within that cut that you just played, right, you were focused on the stuff portion of it. The thing that was interesting to me that made me kind of think of the fact that he is a newer manager to this particular situation is the idea that he was talking about this almost like it was a regular season match, right? Or a matchup, where he's like, he gave us five. Well, when it comes to the postseason, giving you five is great, right? Obviously, if you can get it. But ultimately, the bigger thing is, like, are you going to keep those runs off the board? And battling is fine. But, you know, if you need to go to the pen at a certain point, you need to go to the pen. And I know there's a lot of people, although Framber just seemed like he was going to be the selection there. Like, I think that was the thing. But if you were going to, uncork Ronel Blanco, you know what I mean? Like, when do you go to him?
Well, and that's a great point. And I hadn't even thought of that, but it's making my mind race right now.
Ronel Blanco, mind you, that was fantastic.
Yeah, it was good.
In the month of September.
But you talk about, the whole conversation about Framber being an ace. When you trot your ace out there in the postseason, you don't say, hey, Dallas Keuchel, hey, Garrett Cole, hey, Zach Greinke, hey, Justin Verlander, just give me five. No, you don't. You don't tell your ace, just give me five. You tell your ace, this is the ball, go get him, and let's ride him as long as we can. Boy, that's a really good point that I hadn't thought of. Like, to get just five out of the presumed ace, the game one starter, that ain't enough.
And here's the tough part about it, because I am talking about Ronel Blanco, and I don't think you have that guy just ready to go at all. Because, I mean, this happens early on in the game when you're having some struggles there. But that's not the only thing, right? And I think the biggest thing that we start talking about is how he manages as we continue, right? First of all, we could talk about the decision to put Hader in there in a 3-0 game. Because that does make you wonder, like, where is he in some of these respects, right? Because he's, in this instance, it sounds like almost he's treating this like a regular season game. But when he talks about Hader and his decision to use him, he seems to have more of a must win situation, and we put Hader in. But the problem that you now have is with the just high unlikelihood that you're going into the bottom of the ninth, down three runs, and it's not likely that you're going to get this win.
Yeah.
You're going to Hader is the type of reliever that you can run out tomorrow or today, right? The next day.
Mm-hmm.
But if you do get a win then, and you need to run him out again, is that too much? Yeah. And I think that the value of isn't this the value of having two closer caliber guys that you can maybe use Presley in that situation, who's a closer caliber guy, in a situation that feels a little bit further fetch, and still maybe hold this to a point where you can give yourself a chance to compete.
And you've had a lot of confidence in Abreu
in the same
vein. That's the one I was looking at. I was thinking, man, this guy, they generally just trot him out there and he does exactly what he should do in that exact situation. Let's just give us a chance. Maybe we'll get something going in the ninth. you know, and throw Abreu out there. Instead, he went with Hader. So that's the most obvious one, you know, Hader, in terms of, like, you know, questionable, if you want to call it that, spot of decisions. But I like to, again, back to the little things, I like to balance it out with what A.J. Hinch did. Scooble was rolling, man. And then he pulled him. You know, he pulled him because he had that knack, he had that feel for what needed to do with what he needed to do with the matchups. And then Will Vest comes in, and Will Vest, you know, how many managers would have stretched him a little more? Nope, didn't do that either. Went to another guy because of the matchup. So it's just the little stuff. If you want to extend it a little more, I didn't have a huge problem with this. But Jeremy Peña...
small ball.
Yeah,
small ball in the ninth.
Jeremy Peña has only ground into a double play 31 times in his career. In his entire career, he's only ground into a double play 31 times. And he's got him bunting there. I wasn't crazy mad about it, but I wouldn't have done it. I would have let Jeremy Peña... go ahead and swing the bat there. He's fast. He doesn't hit into double plays ever, hardly, in his career. So, that little thing right there. And then the last thing.
In fact, before you move on, do you want to hear Espada's thoughts? This is a cut six here, Fig. Espada was asked about, you know, what the calculus was, the decision to have Peña bun in the bottom of the ninth.
Yes, you know, just trying to give our guys two shots to give us the lead. They always Caratini, McCormick, and potentially Hayward. And, Caratini's gotten some big hits for us from the left side and also from the right side, but especially from the left side. You know, hit that ball pretty hard there to left. And then after that, McCormick reaches first, and then we are one swing away. I just want to give our team an opportunity there, second and third. We want out an opportunity to just get multiple runs there, try to keep us in the game.
That's it. That was, to me, a little questionable. I don't know how you felt about it.
I get it, right? I had a pretty rousing debate with a friend of mine via text during the course of this game about that one and, I mean, various other things that were happening. And in that instance, it's like you're conceding an out, and that feels like, kind of an analytically driven perspective. But when it comes to analytics, that works more over the course of a long season where, over time, more often than not, you get the desired result. I think that this is one of those instances where you look at a spot at playing the moment. And I was cool, especially when you consider the way that Peña had been at the plate. I don't think that you felt great about when he was swinging the bat, the idea of possibly him, hitting and, conceding that out swinging the bat as well. But then also, I think that we cannot forget the amount of pressure that is put by having runners in scoring position.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that was necessary. And you mentioned A.J. Hinch and his decisions. I did find it interesting that the closer there, or the man that he gave the ninth to was
Jason Foley?
Foley ultimately.
And then they
brought him. And I was like, these guys, like, Foley is, he's liable to be worked upon. And so the idea that, hey, now you give him an opportunity to give you a shot at this because you put people in you pressure him by putting a runner in scoring position. I was cool with that. I'm generally a little bit nostalgic towards small ball anyways, but I also think that it made sense in the circumstance. So I'm actually with the spot.
Well, like I said, I wasn't like, oh my gosh, throwing my hands up, but I wouldn't have done that because he's not going to very much more than likely not going to hit into a double play, and he has power. Jeremy Peña has some power that could maybe really, just end things with one swing of the bat or drive into the gap or whatever it may be. But again, I wasn't outraged about it. It just when you add them all up, all the even when you mentioned Hinch going to Foley and Tyler Holton threw two pitches. And that gives him the chance to start today. So he had that in his mind already going in. And he also said the reason that he didn't open the next inning with Yordan coming up to the plate is because he wanted Foley to start with a clean inning. In other words, bases empty. It didn't work out exactly. Well, it did with a win, but not exactly in terms of the matchups. But A.J. Hinch was just a tick ahead of Espada on a lot of these things.
Yeah, and that's upsetting because it was just a tick by which, as you mentioned.
And they lost by just a tick.
Just some inches when it came to, at least when you look at the Jason Hayward swing in the bottom of the ninth. He hit it pretty hard. I was going to say he scalded, but I don't think that you could consider that necessarily as well. Yeah, it was decent exit velocity straight at the first baseman. It's gloved, and unfortunately, the Astros weren't able to get a win, and now they are in a must-win situation.
Hey, you said it.
Yeah, I did.
Go ahead, Figgy, say it. I know you want to.
It's a must-win game.
Yeah.
Damn right it is.
Yeah.
Damn right it is.
We sound excited about it. But, no, this is a tough place to be for these Astros, right? Mm-hmm. And thankfully, you get Hunter Brown up there. How confident do you feel in that? We'll have more opportunities to talk about that. But he's been great this year. Now also he's getting into this playoff context, right? You need him to step up in a big way. And maybe more importantly, you need your bats to get up early. Like, you need to put him in a situation where he has a little bit of support as well with runs on the board.
Boy, you cannot give up runs early. I mean, of all you know, players, pitchers, Hunter Brown has been nails. But, boy, then, you know, you give up some runs early today. It's going to tighten everything up. It's going to tighten your body up, so to speak. Yeah. And you know what I'm talking about?
The lemon booty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a tough ask for these guys. You got the right guy on the mound. You know, Texter made a statement. One of the texters from the 713. I wish people would stop. With kind of force feeding that Fromber is an ace. I think it stopped. You know, I think it's been a question for 2 years. We're off of that. Then he pitched really well. Then he gets game one. He battled as Espada said, but he wasn't an ace.
No, and that's unfortunately you need an ace in that situation going up against Tarik Skubal, and you fall 3-1. Back in action, 132 or maybe 35. We'll see today at Minute Maid Park. In fact, in just a little bit, maybe about 20 minutes, let's talk to our guy Adam Spillane. He was out there, get some of his perspectives and begin getting ready for game two. But coming up next in the loop, let's get our question of the day. We're a quarter way through the season, thereabouts, in the NFL. What is your grade, letter grade, for these Texans? Texting in 713-572-4610. We'll do that next on Sports Radio 610.
Biggie, let's hit him big time.
Houston, let's get in the loop.
You better get ready because we're going to show up and show up.
With John Lopez and Reggie Atitula. Always live.
Love it. Love it.
Always local.
Don't ever underestimate the heart of a champion.
You're in the loop on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610.
That's right. In the loop, Sports Radio 610, of course. Lopez, Figgy Fig, myself, Reginald Atitula, hanging out with you. We currently at NRG Stadium, watching the situation get set up for the H-Town Week. Bills game coming up on Sunday, and we haven't even got where they're in the midst of doing it. So it's not done, but it already is looking really good out here.
Tell
Lopez.
You what, our app hits different when you see that H-Town in that end zone over there. It's going to be look sweet. I don't want to do any pictures or anything because I don't know how people would feel about
come
that.
Come on, man.
But I mean,
what are you talking about?
713-572-4610.
Don't bring it up then, man.
Yeah, Bully Lopez ended up doing this, so that's Lopez's fault in my mind.
Ask for forgiveness, not permission. Is that the old line?
That is what they say. Yeah. I don't be doing that, though. I'm a little scared behind that. But, yeah, no, we're having fun out here. But you can get involved with the program by texting in 713-572-4610. That's where you can let us know or give us your answer, rather, to the question of the day. You remember Skype?
Barely, because COVID killed it, and then everything went to Zoom and StreamYard and all that stuff.
Yeah, they really fumbled the bag. That's not the question of the day. That was just what we happened to be talking about. No, the question of the day, about a quarter of the way through the NFL season, what is your letter grade for these Houston Texans? Again, 713-572-4610. I heard the guys on Payne and Pendergast kind of mentioned some of this. They had a letter grade for C.J. Stroud at one point. But Lopez, just for the team in general, and if we want to, we can even break it down even further. Where do you grade the first quarter of the season for these Houston Texans?
So this is like a progress report back in middle school.
100%.
Yeah,
the ones that you would hide from your moms.
I used to hate those progress reports. Put so much pressure on you to get better.
I mean, that is absolutely the goal is, hey, do a little bit better.
Because how many teachers ever said on a progress report, all good here, doesn't need to do a dang thing different?
Oh, I know what kind of student you were.
No, I'm saying even the good students, they would say they would always try to nitpick. So I guess as a progress report, I am going to nitpick with this as well. I can't give the squad higher than a C.
Wow.
Is that low?
I mean, not necessarily. There's already people coming in with their answers on the text line from the 979. They give him a C+, so that feels like about where you're at.
Yeah.
Someone has a B-, which was what I was thinking immediately. 346 has a C, and we can get into the reasons why. Some people sent their reasons. We appreciate you doing that, but you said you can't give him higher than a C. What's going on there?
And the reasons why is it's not even really about the expectation. I mean, if it's based on expectations, it might be a C-, you know, on what we thought. But it's like where they are in, and you know how I am. I always go back to the position groups, you know, the rooms. Wide receiver room. Tank's been injured. Steph's been hot and cold. And Nico's been off the charts. Yeah, okay. Offensive line room. Well, that would be a D, you know. You know, you go back to quarterback room, A. You know, tight ends, about a C, right? So if you look at the rooms, you know, and how they're performing, forget the expectation. And then on the defensive side, don't even get me started on the DBs and cornerbacks right now. Linebacker's been good. Defensive line interior has been good. But the stat just keeps gnawing at me. You got two, you got the number three overall pick and a very high-priced defensive end that have combined four sacks in four games. That's not what I expected. So in terms of, like, what the expectation was, I can't really give him more than a C.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, you think about it on the letter grade, a C is passing, but, yeah, you know,
they're passing.
Still a good amount of room for improvement, which if you had to describe this Texans team, that's absolutely where you'd be. For some reason, this reminds me of the story that my mom always tells me. When she was in college, one of her professors said that an A in the class means you're God. And nobody's God, and the B in the class means that, or B+ rather in the class would mean that you are the professor, and y'all don't know more than the professor, so y'all can start at a B-. And I was like, that is crazy.
I don't like that professor.
I wouldn't either. And sometimes I feel like I'm that professor with this Texas team right now, because I there's a level of expectation that we bring to this. You mentioned that you're keeping that out of it. It's kind of hard to not put that in this. But yeah, I think I will give them, you know what, with what you're saying and with the kind of the consideration of what a, you know, what that means, I think a C+ absolutely is there. And you can talk about the fact that there's been some really good things within it, which is why I wanted to go to B-. We've seen, like, a CJ, clearly. We've seen him be really good, but there's been two really good games, and there's been a couple of games where it's like, that's not necessarily the CJ that we've come to expect, and that we, on a game-to-game basis, talk less of the high-water marks that he can put up.
Yeah.
The defense has, they've had a few, they've definitely had, you know, incredible plays and stops and things of that nature, but they haven't been, like, you know, locked down either. Like, I don't think that there's a point in this team, besides maybe, like, the connection that Nico Collins and CJ Stroud have, that you can go is like, hey, they're firing on all cylinders. And then there's definitely places, hello offensive line, where I have real concerns on, like, how good is
even
this,
really mentioned,
right? Like, how good is this actually going to get to at any given point? Yeah. So yeah, no, this feels like a C plus, where, okay, you're passing, but there's some things that need to kick into gear, especially once you start moving to the more you get out of the introductory phase. And if we want to talk about it, when you face some teams that are beatable, and now you're moving to some teams that are going to be tough.
You mentioned the offensive line, and we're going to dig into that more later in the show. But, you know, they got grades, and I don't know. I don't know how you want to read into that. But let me ask you this.
Okay.
Part of the grade is coaching.
Yeah.
You know, offense, defense, head coach. Offense, I thought he came on strong, you know, in the Jacksonville game. But overall, I'll give him a B-. I won't go as low as a C.
For Bobby.
But that's that ties in with you know, how much of it is him and how much of it is the underperformance of that sounds harsh, but it is an underperformance in some of those rooms that I talk about.
Yeah, no, that all comes in, but that's one of those buck stops here things.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Ultimately, Bobby Slowick takes responsibility for his offense, and D'Amico Ryans takes you know, responsibility for the entirety of the team. And I think that when you start talking about coaching, discipline is a question that, or is a word, is a watchword that we've brought up many a time in these first 4 weeks. And not in a good way, necessarily.
Yeah.
And so that's a frustration, and that has to be a ding for the coaching staff that I think we know and we respect and we like quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Uh, But you've seen that there's room to grow, and now they can use that as a turn that into a positive for themselves. And I think that's the way that you have to handle it, right? Like, you know, the incremental perspective is one that you have to have as the coach, because if you don't have that, then you're going to look at not meeting expectations and crumble, right? Like, there's going to be a meltdown. So they have to have the idea that, hey, let's get better from where we are. But just on a grade scale, like, there's definitely room for improvement. So I'm with you there.
And I knew this was coming, and it is here from the text board. They're 3-1.
Yes,
they're 3-1. That all things considered is probably an A. You know, that they managed to do this. But we're grading the performance on the field. 3-1 versus other 3-1s around the league. When you look at the performance on the field, they don't compare. You know, they don't compare to some of these other 3-1 teams. Hell, even the team coming in, they got worked pretty good, you know, by the Ravens. But they have that you know, the pelts on the wall this season of having performed and lived up to those expectations.
And I'm going to be careful using this word, because when you say this word, or when you say this phrase, rather, it can be heard as that is what I am actually calling the Texans, and I don't want you to get into that place. So there you go. Disclaimer up front. Okay, we good? All right, cool. This is the tough part about using the win-loss record as the end-all, be-all of an evaluation of a team, is that you can find yourself with a paper tiger. Yeah. Again, not calling these Texans a paper tiger. I think that they very much have the capability of being a legitimate, very good, contending team in this league.
Yeah.
But if you just go, well, they got to win, that is how you make paper tigers, right? Mm-hmm. That is how you do not evaluate the ways that they play, is when you just look at the wins and losses, because each game is not the same. If you are looking at this Bills game as the same exact challenge, and not even just like when it comes to the X's and O's of it, but just level and quality of opponent, if you're looking at them as the same exact challenge as the Jags game, you are going to be sorely disappointed, right? Like, there are different levels of quality in opponents, and we can be honest in the fact that they have not faced the highest quality opponents early, and they've found a way to struggle against them. If I don't say that to take anything away from the fact that they managed to get wins. Those are good things. However, if I'm going to try and predict future success, and particularly if I'm going to talk about the way that they handle those things with the expectations of where they are, they have not done enough, and they have said as much. This isn't just us sitting up in a booth talking about this. You've heard them say this. In fact, say it enough where you can almost hear the frustration in the voices of Bobby Slowick and particularly D'Amico Ryans. And so, yeah, no, I think that the grade is going to reflect that, and that's why I think we're both in that C-plus range. And it's because we believe so highly in what they're capable of doing. And they do, too, because they invested. They invested money. They invested draft capital. That is the expectation that they have on this team as well.
Yeah, and a perfect text to kind of put a bow on this. Guys, we're going to find out on Sunday where we really stand. Yes, we are. You know, because you're going to get a really good shot from Buffalo, and they have, as I said, they've proved it on the field this year what they can be. But right now, that we don't have that. We don't have that gauge. So what we have is a couple of teams that are not very good that you beat, and then another team that you just beat that might be even worse than the first two. And the only loss is to a really good squad. So, yeah, in terms of what they've done performance-wise, I can't go higher than a C.
Yeah, and so it'll be real interesting to see those grades begin to or how they react to the progress report of these things, I guess is the best way to say. And we'll find that out noon right here in this stadium that we happen to be sitting
Should I take that picture?
I think we might see if we could take a picture, get some video, but then hold on to it.
That's not the fun.
Okay, all right. All right. Lopez is going to get in trouble. I won't. It's In the Loop, Sports Radio 610. Appreciate you hanging out with us. Coming up next, let's welcome in our baseball expert, Adam Spillane. Let's talk a little bit about Game 1 and start getting ready for Game 2 of the Wild Card Series versus the Tigers. We will do that next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with baseball, John Lopez and baseball, Reggie Atitula.
Baseball Spo. Baseball Spo.
I'm a happy man. Unfortunately, the baseball team did not make me happier as they lost yesterday 3-1. And I guess we'll see how happy I am after we have this conversation, when we have to talk about all the reasons why they weren't able to get a win. But when we get to have this man on and play his intro, it's always great. That's Adam Spillane, our Astros insider. Spo, what's happening, man?
Morning, Reggie. How are you?
I'm doing well. Doing well. I could be doing better, obviously, but myself and John, we've been talking about the Espada of it all, because obviously you know that that is going to be a focus after this particular game, and just with the ways that he has existed in his first season at the helm of this Astros team. Let's talk about some of these things. I know you asked this question specifically to Joe Espada about the decision to bunt in the ninth. What was your perspective on it? How did you see and feel that in that moment?
So that wasn't me, but I understood. Listen, I don't.
Okay, my bad.
No. I don't like bunting. I think I've made my thoughts on that pretty clear over the years. I probably would not have done it in that spot, but also, Jeremy Pena's at bats through the first three at bats of that game were pretty bad, and so I do wonder. So I understood the bunt in that regard. I probably still wouldn't have done it, but I understood why. I do wonder if they had more on their bench had they gone to a pinch hitter for Pena, just because of how bad that he looked in his first three at-bats. And granted, the first two were against Tarek Skubal, who made everybody look bad, but the third at-bat wasn't very good. So I understood it in that regard. And having to go to the bench a little earlier than maybe they wanted to, I wonder if things are different if they had more there.
Look, Adam, I want to get to today's lineup because that was something that we were talking about before the show that Espada might do, and he did it, and I want to get your thoughts. But first, back to yesterday before we move on to today. I've been saying it wasn't like A.J. Hinch managed circles around Joe Espada, but he did a lot of little things right, and I'm wondering if that – they lost by just a couple of inches, but I'm wondering if that's something that is really kind of the worry moving forward.
Well, I don't know, like, what Joe could have done different. I guess that's my question.
Yeah.
What do you think Joe could have done different in yesterday's game?
But it's really not even about that. But it's like taking Skubal out. You know, when maybe he could have, others would have left him in. Will Vest, same thing. Obviously, Tyler Holton, just one batter, and then he went with the matchups. It's something that we've seen a lot from A.J. Hinch. I guess the only real thing outside of the bunt would maybe be Hader, but that doesn't have anything to do with A.J. Hinch. You know what I mean? Just like a lot of little decisions that he's making that are just sort of – you always talk about margins. Like, I thought that was a margins kind of game.
Yeah, I mean, A.J. said after the game he took Skubal out because he was cramping, so I don't know, if Skubal isn't cramping, I think that he probably stays in for the seventh at 88 pitches. I think, if anything, some Tigers people were criticizing A.J. for the bullpen usage. I think just reading some of the stuff from Detroit, they thought that Holton should have started the ninth and faced Yordan Alvarez, and maybe if they get Alvarez to start the ninth inning goes a little bit differently, because the Tigers still had to burn two relievers in the ninth inning, and I think that's one advantage that the Astros have coming out of yesterday, is that they got to see Jason Foley in the ninth, and then they got to see Bo Brisky, and that might impact things moving forward. So yeah, it's a margins game, but I think that that game was won in the second inning when Framber Valdez couldn't get a third out, and then the Astros really just couldn't touch Tarek Skubal, and they just couldn't get the lineup to turn over one more time in the ninth inning.
We're talking to Adam Spillane here on In the Loop Sports Radio 610. And so as we move to today, we see Jason Hayward move into the lineup. And I thought that the approach was very interesting, because I guess you would generally think, hey, with a pitcher, you want to get, work at long at bats and force him out of the game. But it seemed like these Astros were taking really quick or getting early swings on Skubal. With that approach, like, do you think that continues on, especially with like a chaos lineup, or do you think that maybe they try and get after these fellas?
Well, they are an aggressive team by nature, and they have been all year. I think they are probably the most aggressive team in baseball. They don't strike out a lot because of it, and I think that you saw them take that approach against Skubal, because you don't want to get the two strikes against that guy. And yeah. Skubal faced, over the course of the regular season, Skubal faced 441 hitters, or I should say Skubal got to two strikes against 441 hitters, and he struck 52% of them out and allowed a 111 batting average when he did get to two strikes with a 159 slugging percentage. You're not going to beat Tarek Skubal when you get to two strikes. Only one pitcher was better with two strikes than Tarek Skubal over the course of the regular season. And so the time when teams have been able to get to Skubal have come early in the count. I think opponents were hitting like 300 against him with an OPS over 900 on the first pitch. So you got to try and ambush him, just because his stuff is so good, and he has so many different weapons that once he gets to two strikes, you're basically dead in the water at that point. And, you know, there are guys in this lineup that can hit with two strikes. They have some very good two-strike hitters. But this isn't the Astros lineup of 2019 or 2022. It's just not that deep. And so I don't think you want Mauricio Dubon having to hit with two strikes against Tarek Skubal. I don't think you want Jake Meyers to have to hit with two strikes against Tarek Skubal. So you might as well try and jump on him early, because that's your best chance. Now, against a very different Tiger staff today, and then maybe tomorrow if they win today, I think that you will see probably a little different approach, just because the guys that they are facing aren't nearly as good. But I think that was probably the right approach to take against Skubal. And then you saw, once he got out of the game, they were a little bit more patient against that Tigers bullpen, at least in the ninth inning they were.
Yeah, you mentioned the lineup, and that's what I wanted to talk about. I put it on our doc before the show. I'm a little worried that Joe Espada is going to start Chaz McCormick in this game. And sure enough, the lineup came out about 15 minutes ago, and McCormick is batting ninth. And I get it on the one hand, because McCormick had a very good at bat yesterday, but on the other, you're facing an opener, a left hander, where McCormick's right hand bat might not even come into play because they're gonna take out Holton, you know, presumably after two innings.
No, Holton might just face three hitters and that's it.
So put the right hand bat in there, McCormick. I was a little bit worried about that, and he did it.
I think the way they set up the lineup is that this is who they believe are their best nine guys. I think that's the way that they probably set it up today, because normally when you face an opener, you have a little bit of an idea of who's coming after that guy. Today you don't. I mean, Joe Espada said they have a little bit of an idea who the Tigers will go to after Holton, because they've been doing this now for the better part of 6 weeks. But you don't totally know. So my guess is, at some point, there's a good chance that Chaz McCormick gets to face a left-handed pitcher one way or another, just because obviously you have McCormick's batting ninth, right? I don't have it in front of me. So you have McCormick ninth, then you have Altuve batting in the leadoff spot, and then you have two lefties after that. So I think there's a good chance that AJ has a lefty in that spot for that pocket. So you never know. But I do think that he went with what he feels like is his best nine offensively. I think that's the way that you have to approach this. I think that's why Hayward is probably in there as well early on in this one. And then you just try to match up as the game moves along. I thought the at-bat that McCormick had in the ninth inning was just incredibly impressive against a really good right-handed pitcher when he hadn't been in a game in 3 weeks. And I thought that was probably one of their better at-bats that game yesterday. I think that's why he's in there.
We're talking to Adam Spillane. And Spo, you know, there was a little consternation about utilizing and turning to Hader in the ninth when you were down 3-0. Not necessarily having to litigate that, but going forward in this series, do you expect him to go to Hader again? Is this a situation where you could see maybe Abreu or Presley in a high-leverage situation late? How do you anticipate a spot of maybe utilizing some of those high-leverage pitchers in this game and possibly a third one if they get the dub?
Yeah, everyone's available. Everyone's available. Like, this is do or die. And so they are going to, if they go out, they aren't going to have any bullets left in their chamber if they go out. So using Hader yesterday doesn't impact his availability for today. I don't imagine it would impact his availability for tomorrow. If there is a tomorrow, unless he has to throw 50 pitches or something today, which I don't expect to happen. So they wanted to use Hader to keep that game close. They don't have a lot of great options in that bullpen. They kind of used them all just to get that game to the ninth inning. That's kind of the negative with having to pull Framber Valdez as early as they did. And so, yeah, they could have left Caleb Ferguson in there for the ninth, but then, hey, maybe the Tigers score a couple of runs against Ferguson, and then they can kind of rest their bullpen. So, you know, by using Hader, yeah, you had to use your own guy yesterday, but you also forced the Tigers to have to use two extra arms that maybe they didn't want to have to use yesterday, had that been a 5-0 game or a 6-0 game. So once you get into postseason, you're not going to just punt on a game. And I think that's why they decided to go with Hader. And, you know, are you saving him for a game that might not ever happen? So that's the tough spot that's the tough spot of trailing a close playoff game, is that, you know, okay, I save him for tomorrow, but in the meantime, I give up three runs in the ninth inning, and now we have no chance to win this game today, and then we get blown out, you know, tomorrow. So you can't you can't necessarily utilize your bullpen in the playoffs trying to predict what will happen moving forward.
So if the Astros fall behind early, clearly that's not something they want to do. But we see Kikuchi, you think, because of what you just talked about?
Yeah, he will. You know, he's available today. He is, I think, I don't know if he necessarily said it this way, but Kikuchi said that he was told, you know, a few days ago that just be ready to pitch game two just in case. He didn't know exactly when he might start in this series, but they told him to be ready to pitch game two just in case. I think that if Hunter Brown were to get in trouble early and they would have to go to the bullpen, you know, for a long guy, I think that they would go with Spencer Arrighetti first. But yeah, I do think that Kikuchi, if they need him, they will certainly use him because you can't save him for a game that might not happen. So that's the position that they're in. That's what's tough about facing elimination. Once you get to the postseason, is that you never know, you know, how these things are going to turn out. And you know, if you save all your bullets for a game that might not happen, then you're going to find yourself at home a little earlier than you wanted to.
Astros get a victory today.
Yeah, I do think I still like them in this series. I think if you look at the Tigers, they were 21-10 this season in games that Skubal started. They were under 500 in games that he didn't start. You saw yesterday just how little, you know, just how kind of average or below average they are offensively. They scored those three runs in the second inning and really didn't threaten much after that. I think they only had one extra base hit in yesterday's game, and that was that little bloop double down the line that Kyle Tucker might have misplayed or might not have had a great look at late in the game. And then the Astros did, you know, I do think the one encouraging thing about yesterday's game were the at-bats that they took against Jason Foley and Bo Brisky late in that game, because those are two of Detroit's better guys out of that bullpen, and to get good looks at them the way that they did is important. And I was a little surprised that AJ's using Holton as their opener. I get he wants to get him against Tucker and Alvarez, but to me, that's one of their better late guys against left-handed hitters. So I was a little surprised that they went in that direction. So, yeah, I think the Astros win today, and I think they win tomorrow.
All right.
How about that?
Looking forward to it. So it is a decree, so it shall be, by our baseball insider, Adam Spillane. Follow him on Twitter, at Adam Spillane, and then also at Sports Radio 610. You'll see his stuff to keep you up to date with what's happening and with some good perspective. Appreciate you, my man, and we'll talk to you later.
Sounds good, guys. Take it easy.
There he goes. Appreciate him joining us, as well as our baseball talk right here on In the Loop Sports Radio 610 is brought to you and presented by T-Mobile. Head to T-Mobile.com and get a great deal on the iPhone 16 Pro. You feeling better? You feeling better, Lopez?
I'm feeling much better.
Okay.
I'm feeling much better, especially what the last thing he said, talking about, you know, those were some good at-bats. I was a little worried about McCormick. I still am a little bit, even after talking with him about that, because they're going to put a right-hander against him. They're going to have a right-hander against him. The way A.J. Hinch uses his pen, it's going to be a right-hander.
All right. Well, we're looking forward to game two, 132 first pitch, so they say. We'll see how that ultimately goes. Hunter Brown is going. Chaz McCormick, as you mentioned, and Jason Hayward, both in the lineup. They're batting ninth and eighth, respectively. I put that backwards. But coming up next in the loop, let's go around the NFL, where your opponent this week might be missing a key totem to what they do. We'll talk about that next.